Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
From KMOX Sports.
Come on, let's get going now.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Wynn swings and he drives that to left field. Back to the track and gone!
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
Now, Matt Pauly and the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Here we go on a Friday night. Welcome in. It is time for a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. As I've got you for the next about hour and a half, hour and 40 minutes. We get done a little early tonight for SLU Billikens basketball. Late night at Chaffetz Arena as they've got an 8 o'clock game. You know, this just tells you, as you get older, earlier times get later and later. An 8 o'clock game to me, as somebody who has two kids at home, seems like a very, very, very late night. Coming off New Year's Eve, you would have talked to Matt from 10, 15 years ago. 8 o'clock is early. That's nothing. That's the start of the evening period. Haven't even eaten dinner or anything yet by the time you get 8 o'clock. So just a perspective on things change as you get a little bit older. But yes, I'll call it late night at Chaffetz Arena tonight. 8 o'clock start, SLU and St. Joseph's. SLU looking for a 2-0 start to A-10 play. That was a great win that they got on the road against Fordham. They hadn't won a single road game in non-conference play, and then they were able to pick up the victory there. And I'll probably say this a couple times over the course of the program tonight, but I'm a big believer that when you're a college basketball team and things just don't go great for you during non-conference season, the best thing that happens is when the calendar turns to when conference play starts, you've got a brand new lease on life, and hopefully that's going on with SLU after a disappointing non-conference season. So we've got a lot coming up on the program tonight. We'll talk some Cardinals baseball. We'll talk college football playoff. We'll talk a little Blues. They are in action. Busy night in downtown tonight, as the Blues are going to get started in less than an hour. And then SLU will get started an hour after that. The Blues are in action this evening as they take on Ottawa. As far as our guest for the program tonight, Kevin Wheeler is going to join us. We'll talk all things baseball with him in hour number two of the program. And then coming up in about 10 minutes or so, Rich Sermonello is going to join us to talk all things college football playoff, as the college football playoff down to their final four. The semifinal matchups will be coming up this week. We're at a point right now, though, I wanted to open with this. I talked about this a whole bunch today during the Gas House Gang. It was Bernie Miklas and myself on the program today. We're at the point now that the calendar has moved into the new year that you'd like to see the Cardinals find a way to get this Nolan Arenado thing figured out. Now, is it the end of the world if this stretches out to spring training time? No, it's not. And I realize there's still... there's a big thing hanging out there. The Alex Bregman situation's got to get figured out. So I think some teams that would view Arenado as a second choice are waiting to see if they can get Bregman. And if they do, then they're not going to be interested in Arenado. The Bregman market has not been super aggressive so far this offseason either. I think he is continuing to want to find a little bit more money. But we are hearing that the market for Arenado just is not what anybody really thought it would be. That a lot of people thought that there'd be more of a market for him. Now, again, maybe that changes once Bregman's off the not available anymore, because then Arenado becomes somebody that teams might be more interested in. But I was wrong, and I said this. I was wrong. I said that I thought that there was a higher percentage chance that Arenado would get traded before Christmas then he would end up being in spring training with the Cardinals. And he obviously did not get traded by Christmas. Now, there was a trade just about in place for him to go to the Astros, so I guess I got it right in that sense that they had found a deal for him before he turned it down. But yeah, Kevin Wheeler and I are going to talk about this in the next hour. I'm at a point right now with this team that I still think Arenado's going to get traded. I'm more than 50% convinced. Am I where I was at a week ago, 2 weeks ago on that? No, I'm not. I'm not saying it's a 99% chance that Arenado gets moved. But I still think all indications are and all likelihoods are that Arenado does get moved at some point before spring training gets underway. But every day that goes by, there's more of a chance that he doesn't get moved. And the narrative has just remained absolutely the same when it comes to the Cardinals. We can't talk about anything. We can't talk about anything with the Cardinals until we get this Arenado thing figured out. That's for somebody in my job, that's the frustrating thing. Because everything that's worth talking about in some way, shape, or form is connected to Arenado. So you might say, hey, Matt, what do you mean by that? How is whether or not Ryan Helsley gets traded or whether or not Eric Fetty gets traded connected to Arenado? Well, it's clear because the Cardinals have said that they need to reduce payroll and that the easiest way to do that is to move on from Arenado. I was sitting in a room when John Mozeliak said that at the Baseball Winter Meetings. And he said there's other ways to do this, but the easiest way would be to move Arenado. So if they can't move him, and unless they back off their belief that they need to drop payroll, which there's been no indication that's the case. If it is, that makes things look a little bit different. But so far, no indications are that the Cardinals are not going to reduce payroll like they've said. So if you can't move Arenado, you're trying to move a bunch of other guys because it's going to take multiple salaries to make up for the money that you're going to pay Arenado. And it doesn't even fix everything because you got multiple years left with Arenado. And for the most part, some of those contracts that you're going to be trading away, whether it's Ryan Helsley's final year of club control, whether it's Eric Fetty's final year, Steven Matz's final year, those are all 1 year type situations. So you'll still have more stuff to figure out in future time. So it's kind of a jumbled mess right now talking about it. I would love to know the type of conversations that are going on in John Mozeliak's office about whether or not there are teams out there that I have to think there's a handful of teams out there that have some interest in Arenado, but they are not willing to go there until they know for sure that they're not going to be able to sign Bregman. And the litmus test in this whole thing is going to be, what do we hear about Arenado post Bregman getting signed by somebody? All right, we'll talk college football coming up in just a moment. Rich Sermonello, great college football guest, does stuff with the Maxwell Football Club and their college awards that they give out each year. We'll get his thoughts on what he has seen out of the college football playoffs so far. We'll do that coming up in just a moment or so as we roll on with the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX, taking you through a Friday night edition of the program. Again, we'll get down a little early tonight. St. Louis University Billikens basketball, they are in action this evening as they take on St. Joseph's, and our coverage of that set to begin at 7:45. Right now, very happy to welcome on to the program Rich Sermonello. He is the Vice President of College Awards with the Maxwell Football Club. Maxwell Football Club gives out a number of college football awards each year. Also works as an NFL draft analyst. He joins us right now on the program. Rich, thanks for taking some time with us today. How are you?
Hello, Matt. Thanks for the Counting Crows bump. I appreciate it. How are you?
Are you a Counting Crows guy?
I do like the Counting Crows. And actually, their lead singer, a big Cal Bears football fan, a little known fact. I love music. It's a big part of my life.
Okay. Of all the bands out there, if I came back with like Springsteen and there's a guest, I'm sure there's guests out there, be like, oh, thanks for the Springsteen. Like, yeah. You don't hear that very often with Counting Crows. That's unique.
Yeah, no, that's very nostalgic for me.
Okay, good stuff. I want to lead with this. There's only one SEC team left in the college football playoff, and they've been an SEC team for about 15 minutes. What do you take away from? Is this an anomaly, or are things evening out in the world of college football with NIL and everything else that's going on?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think as we once we get to the back end, once we get past January 20th and we do a little deep dive into what happened in 2024, what happened in the playoffs, I think that's going to be one of the big storylines because, yeah, Texas is an SEC team, but to your point, I still kind of think of them as a Big 12 team. They're an import. If it had not been for Texas and Oklahoma coming on board this year, there would have been no SEC teams in the semifinals. And yeah, I think you touched on it. We're seeing a little bit of democratization of college football, college sports in general, not just NIL, but transfer portal has been a big factor as well. SEC has been able to gobble up depth for many, many years. You know, you lose a starter, you plug in another four or five star player, and these rosters are still very deep and talented, but we're seeing now throughout the month of December, teams like Alabama, like Auburn, like Tennessee, losing a lot of their high-profile recruits very early in their careers because they want playing time immediately. So it's not full-blown parity. I don't expect to see the Minnesotas or the BYUs or, you know, the Pittsburghs competing for national championships, but obviously the SEC has lost a little bit off of its fastball compared to what we've seen over the past decade.
These coaches are re-recruiting their team every year, and if you're second on the depth chart at Alabama and you've got an opportunity to go be a starter at Ole Miss, why wouldn't you do it?
Yeah, and that is happening every single day. It's really dominated a lot of our time. We're building a database as we speak with a lot of our staffers and our interns, just trying to keep track of what's happening with a lot of these players. And it's not just, you know, the John Mateers, the quarterback from Washington State going to Oklahoma. It's not just those high profile. When you dig a little deeper, there are rosters being built out in the Mountain West, out in the MAC, where they're getting players from those Power Four now programs and building rosters with really, really talented kids. So there's a shift that's taking place. The SEC is always going to be the SEC, and clearly it's not the best conference this year, perhaps again in 2025, but the gap between the SEC and even the Big Ten, I think the Big Ten has clearly surpassed the SEC right now.
You look at a Notre Dame team that's got a ton of transfers. Longtime college football fans are not used to Notre Dame being transfer U, but that's the world we're living in now.
Yeah, I mean, listen, even Dabo has broken down and picked up a couple of transfer recruits. You know, Dabo Sweeney from Clemson is someone who's been very outspoken, doesn't like the transfer portal, wants to kind of build a farm system with his recruits, which is very admirable. But I think to compete these days, if you really want to be a true national championship contender, you're at a competitive disadvantage if you're not going into the portal and building up your roster. So even now Dabo's doing it. And, you know, yesterday we saw that big return from Jaden Harrison for Notre Dame to start the second half against Georgia. You know, that's a kid who had been playing his entire career at Marshall and was an All-American return man. And Marcus Freeman's like, hey, we need to continue to improve our special teams. Let's pluck him out. And that winds up being really a fortuitous pickup for Notre Dame yesterday.
Is Marcus Freeman the most likable Notre Dame coach in I don't know how many years? I mean, it seems like the college football world have come back around to Notre Dame largely because of how likable Marcus Freeman is.
That's another great point. You know, as I was kind of like processing everything last night, it's funny you bring that up because I was thinking the same thing. Usually Notre Dame is the one program or one of the programs in college football that's easiest to dislike. But Marcus Freeman, at the age of 38, he is such a likable guy. He's done such a great job of building that coaching staff. I've been so impressed by what he's done since that week two loss to Northern Illinois. And yeah, the hatred for Notre Dame seems to be tamped down at this point. You put them against Georgia, I think there's nationally, there's probably more dislike for the SEC in general. I wouldn't be surprised if more people were rooting for the Fighting Irish yesterday than they were for Georgia.
Most people want this bracket to be fixed where you can get into it by being a conference champion, but you don't get a bye by being a conference champion. I haven't heard anybody disagree with that. If you want to be that person, you can. But do you think this gets fixed?
Yes. Yeah, I do. It might take till 2026. That's the biggest flaw right now. And listen, I'm not Chicken Little here, Matt. I love this playoff so far. I know there are flaws, but it's dramatically better than the postseason we've had at any point in college football history. I've had a blast. I love the on-campus games for the opening round. There was so much fun for what's happening, and hopefully we get more beginning on Thursday and Friday night of next week. But that's the one glaring flaw. Like, I love what Boise State did. Big fan of Arizona State. But should they have had first-round buys? I don't believe so. And the other part of that, too, is it creates an inequity in terms of the second round. Like, Oregon really shouldn't have been playing Ohio State in the second round. It should have been a Boise State, Indiana winner. That's who, you know, if you're going to be the number one team in the country, your prize at that point is no home game, and you got to play Ohio State. So I think that has to be fixed. There has to be a unanimous vote in order to have that happen in 2025. I don't know if you're going to get the Mountain West on board. Boise State got the number three seed this year. So it might take until 2026, but I do think we'll get that fixed in the near future.
Yeah, and I guess that could, there's been talk about expanding this playoff even more. I guess at the very least, you can look at these conference commissioners and say there's more money to be had if we can make some changes and some tweaks here. Because you're right, if you're the Mountain West, if you're the Big 12, if you're the ACC, you might want to push back at that.
Yeah, you might want the bye, but nobody wants to play an extra game, but there's a lot of benefit to getting. I would be inclined. See, I always want the regular season to matter as much as possible. I love the regular season in college football. I think everybody does. Every week feels like a playoff run. So if you want to give a prize to the conference champs, even if they are ACC, Big 12, Mountain West, or AAC, if they happen to qualify for a group of five spot, I would say let's make the bonus be, if you're not top four, you get that first, the automatic home game in the opening round. Like, I think that's a really nice prize. You got to play an extra game. You're the 12 seed or the 10 seed. But here's the deal. We'll give you an opening round home game. And we saw those campuses, even though those games were blowouts in week one, that was something I've never seen before. Nobody has. We've never seen an FBS-level home game in the playoffs. And I just thought the atmospheres were fantastic.
I found myself thinking that the regular season actually meant more because there were so many weeks where we had basically college football playoff elimination games. And previously, when there was only four teams in, teams got eliminated, and then that was it. Now there were more opportunities to have those kind of games. I loved the impact of the expanded playoff on the regular season.
Totally agree with you, Matt. I thought November was fantastic. You had teams jockeying for the playoffs. You had all the excitement at the end of the year. Is it SMU? Is it Alabama? Can South Carolina work their way into the mix? You know, how about Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss? I thought it was phenomenal. I think this was the thought I had as I watched that first Friday night game between Indiana and the Irish. My overriding thought was, and I think a lot of people had the same one, how in the heck did it take, you know, over a century to get to this point? I mean, it's so elementary that we should be having more great football games in December and January. And so it's finally here right now. There is a possibility we'll go from 12 to 14 in 2026. I think that's fine. I would be against expanding any further. But more meaningful football in December has been just a joy for fans of college football.
The trendy pick is Ohio State to win the national championship. Are you on that train, or are you looking somewhere else?
Hard to really look outside of Ohio State. I mean, it's fascinating. It's been, what, a month since they had that horrible performance against rival Michigan as a 3-touchdown favorite. But, you know, between that game against Michigan and Tennessee, Ohio State finally figured out, like, let's stop trying to be Michigan light and do pound, you know, ground and pound between the tackles. We have all these great athletes on offense. Let's turn them loose. The defense, especially at the line of scrimmage, has been phenomenal. Not a big fan of Texas at this point. I've seen a lot of times this year where they just can't put a full game together. They didn't do it against Clemson. They nearly blew it against ASU. So, yeah, I'm looking at Ohio State. Penn State, Notre Dame feels like a toss-up. Right now I'm so in love with that Notre Dame coaching staff. I think they'll find a way. Could be Ohio State against Marcus Freeman, Freeman against his alma mater, potentially.
Last thing for Rich Sermonell. I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit. You do some NFL draft analyst work. Luther Burden III from Missouri. How high can this guy get drafted?
Yeah, I think he got underutilized a bit this year. That whole offense was iffy. I don't think we saw the full potential of Luther Burden throughout the 2024 season. I think we'll see better film from 2023. I think Luther is a mid first round, end of first round, somewhere in that pick 16 to 32. Would not be the least bit surprised if he goes that high at the end of April.
Rich, we always appreciate your time. I encourage people to look at what you guys are doing at the Maxwell Football Club, maxwellfootballclub.org. So many awards that you give out every single year. Follow you on Twitter at Rich Sermonell. Thanks for the time. Hopefully we can catch up again as we come up on the draft.
Would love that. Thanks, Matt.
Awesome. Very good. Rich Sermonell joining us here on the program. We appreciate him taking a few moments with us. When we return, we'll talk St. Louis Blues hockey. They are back at this evening. First game since the Winter Classic, where they played so well against the Blackhawks. They are at home this evening. We'll preview that game. We'll hear a little bit from Jim Montgomery. That's coming up next. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Back at it on a Friday night at Graybar Sports Open Line right here on at KMOX. Kind of a weird, this week is weird, and last week was weird as well. When Christmas and New Year's Day happen right in the middle of the week, you come back for work for a couple days, but it doesn't really feel like you're fully at work quite yet. There was more traffic today. Traffic seemed a little bit more normal today as compared to yesterday, but it feels like for most working folks, things are actually going to start again coming up this Monday when the new year really, it's that first Monday after New Year's that things seem to pick up just a bit. Blues are in action tonight as they are going to match up at home. They've got a game this evening against the Edmonton Oilers. Head coach Jim Montgomery did speak with the media at an optional morning skate earlier today. I want to go through some of the things that he had to say, starting with the opponent tonight and Ottawa, and what type of challenge they are going to bring.
Ottawa is, they play hard. They're physical. They go hard to the net, and they defend their net really well. You know, and there's a lot of speed, especially on the top three lines.
Yeah, so we'll see how things go this evening. Again, the Blues are playing some pretty good hockey. They've won three of their last four. They were really, really good in that Winter Classic game against the Blackhawks, a game that they won by a 6-2 score. And Montgomery today was asked what kind of that type of performance and that type of atmosphere and that type of venue. I mean, that was just a very special day on New Year's Eve, being able to go to Wrigley Field and come up with a win like that. What can that do for your club?
Well, it can propel you. It also, the emotion of it, and, you know, for tonight, I'm worried about the first period, you know. But the confidence it should give us playing the right way offensively, I thought that was the hardest we went to the net. It was the quickest we shot pucks at the net when we were either in good position to shoot or we had two people or one person screening the goalie. We had a lot of, I think we had three rebound goals and we had three one-timer goals, like, you know, shooting off the pass. That really helps your offensive game. It's just like passing. You see a D-man stick handle puck on a breakout, it's death, you know? And it's just something we got to keep preaching.
I want to go through some individual players that he talked about. And in that Winter Classic game, Cam Fowler was, again, really, really good, as he has been sensational since joining the Blues. He scored twice in his 1,000th NHL game. There's been a lot of different conversations about what Fowler brings to this team, but I thought it was interesting when Montgomery essentially said that the way Fowler is playing right now, that actually it makes the whole team better.
I think it elevates our confidence, number one, and it's another player that makes us feel that we are growing in the right direction and that, you know, we can push for playoffs.
Matthew Joseph is going to be in the lineup this evening. Oscar Sundquist, like many of us, maybe you hear it in my voice, it feels like just about everybody out there is dealing with some type of a sniffle right now. So Sundquist is dealing with some illness. He's not going to play. Instead, Joseph is going to be there. He's been in and out of the lineup this year. Montgomery was asked, what's kind of that next step for him to be an everyday guy?
Need to see more tenacity checking-wise. You know, creating more turnovers. You know, the way I kind of see Walker and Torpchenko, like, I just put them out against anyone. I have that trust and belief. Now, he's got to get to that same area. So those are the areas. Offensively, his skating, obviously, and then holding on to pucks, he's been really good.
Another guy who's been in and out of the lineup a fair amount this year is Alexander Texier. I found this to be really interesting because we have seen Texier play at a high level, but he's also somebody who's had a hard time finding that consistency and being that same guy every single night. But Montgomery really believes in him and feels like he can be a great player in this league.
It's his details. When his details are on, I think he's a top six player in this league. He's got to find the consistency of doing things right. And he has really augmented in that area. That's why I've played him in 3-on-3. I've played him, you know, a little bit on power play and on Thomas's line for a couple of games. And unfortunately, you know, he fell ill.
And then the final thing from Montgomery. So Braden Schenn evidently was out on the ice. It was an optional skate this morning. Not only was he there, he was there early, and he was getting some work in on his own before things even got started. And Montgomery talked about, you know, Schenn being the guy that he is and the effort that he puts in and how that helps him become the player that he has become.
If you want to have success for a long time in this league and be a leader, be a person that's a glue guy ever since he's been in the league, really, once he learned from whoever he learned from in Philly early in his career. You know, it's great leadership, and we can just go to our younger players. Like, you know, look at him. He's working on his game. He's got a purpose when he goes out there. He's trying to get better, what makes him really good for our team.
That's Jim Montgomery speaking with the media earlier today. Again, the Blues are in action this evening as they are going to match up against Edmonton. Blues come into the game with a record of 18-17-4. Ottawa is 19-16-2, and we'll see how things go this evening. One other note, and I mentioned this on my Twitter account today. So sometimes I don't think get things right, and sometimes I see things one way, and it's actually the other way. When the NHL made the announcement that they were moving the Winter Classic to New Year's Eve, like, I at the time I understood it. It's like, okay, that makes sense. You don't want to compete with New Year's Day bowl games. That you're just from a generic sports audience standpoint, you're really going to lose out on that one. You're going to get your hockey fans no matter when you play it. So go try to play it somewhere where you're not competing with football. So what did they do? They moved it to New Year's Eve, and they moved it to, you know, 4 o'clock central on New Year's Eve. Now, again, when they made that move, I was like, okay, that kind of makes sense. I get what they're trying to do. Then you live it. Then you live through what's happening. It's New Year's Eve at 4 o'clock. Who is sitting on their couch watching a game at 4 o'clock on New Year's Eve? If it's later on New Year's Eve, you at least are going to get some of the people who are home. But they didn't want to go up against the college football playoff game that takes place the night of New Year's Eve. 4 o'clock is literally the worst time of the day. No matter what lifestyle you have outside of somebody who literally just never leaves their couch, if you ever leave your home, if you have any activities whatsoever, if you have any family whatsoever, like, there's a very, very good chance that you're not watching that game at 4 o'clock on New Year's Eve. It's just, it's not happening. I was at a day party for my daughter on New Year's Eve, and there were people who were making sure that they could leave a little bit early just so they could, you know, stop at the grocery store or whatever and then be home in time to watch the Blues game. If they're not Blues fans, they're not doing that. And there's a good chance that, you know, I'm talking to a lot of people right now because this is a sports show. I'm talking to a lot of people right now who probably found time on New Year's Eve to watch the Winter Classic because you wanted to watch the Blues play at Wrigley Field, and it's pretty darn cool. But in all honesty, if the Blues wouldn't have been playing in that game, are you watching it? Or are you allowing your New Year's Eve plans to actually go forward? I mean, that's just the last moment visit to the grocery store. That's the chance to go, you know, if you got clothes you need to pick up from somewhere, like whatever. 4 o'clock on New Year's Eve, if you happen to have to work on New Year's Eve, you're probably making your way home from work at that point. Like, it's just, that is, they could not have chosen a worse time than 4 o'clock in the afternoon on New Year's Eve to play that game. And oh yeah, by the way, it got the worst ratings of any Winter Classic in the history of the event. And ratings have been going down year after year after year, but that thing tanked. So I don't know what the answer is. Maybe you just go back to New Year's Day and you just accept the fact that college football is going to rule that day, but hopefully you get some people to, you know, tune if a college football game goes bad or if there's some time between games, you get some people there because you've got a captive audience watching sports that day, so maybe they can make you part of it. Maybe you look at a different time. Maybe it's the day after, like January 2nd. I know a lot of people go back to work the day after New Year's Day, but a lot of people don't. Maybe you do it on January 2nd. Maybe you do it the day after Christmas, December 26th. I don't know what it is, but they could not have chosen a worse time than 4 o'clock in the afternoon on New Year's Eve. It's just the worst. Unless you're playing it at 8 a.m. on the morning of Christmas Day, you're just, it was the worst. And I didn't, when they announced it, I didn't see it. I did not see it. I heard what they were doing, and I just said to myself, okay, that kind of makes sense because they're going to avoid the college football playoffs. Maybe they'll get a few more people to watch. And then you live through New Year's Eve, and you're like, wow, nobody is watching this game right now. And turns out nobody was watching the game because it was terribly, terribly rated. So we'll see what happens with this event moving forward. It's a great event. It doesn't have the pomp and circumstance that it used to. I was talking with Sean Malone, one of our KMOX news folks, a while ago. He made the point to me, and he was right, that you know when the NHL got into the stadium series, it kind of watered down these outdoor games. I think that's part of it as well. The novelty of it has worn off. I think you do have to have it in places like, you know, Wrigley Field or Fenway or whatever. Like that's what you have to do. But at 4 o'clock New Year's Eve, that was a bad decision by the NHL to move it to that spot. 314-436-7900. That's how you can text into the program. We're done in about an hour from now as we're going to get out of here early tonight for Billiken's basketball. They are set to match up against St. Joseph's. Kevin Wheeler's going to join us next hour. We'll wrap up hour number one of the show in just a moment. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Into our final segment of hour number one and hour number two, Kevin Wheeler is going to join us for our weekly Friday conversation. We'll talk all things baseball with him. Some things are actually starting to happen again in baseball. It was pretty quiet over the last week and a half, 2 weeks. Once you get into Christmas Eve or so, you don't see much happening until you get past the New Year's. And just a couple small moves being made today. Charlie Morton is sticking around. This guy is a 17-year veteran. He's been around for a while. He has been signed by the Baltimore Orioles on a one-year deal. So he doesn't make up for losing Corbin Burns like the Orioles did, but a guy who can certainly go in and take the ball every fifth day and put up respectable numbers. So the Orioles, that's a weird team when you think about what they have from a hitting standpoint, a position player standpoint, and what they don't have from a pitching standpoint. And with all due respect to Charlie Morton, he might win them some games in the regular season, but I don't think he helps their World Series hopes. It happened recently, but Teoscar Hernandez going to be back with the Dodgers. And the Dodgers also make another move. There was a a player that was posted, a Korean infielder in Haesung Kim. He signs a three-year, $12.5 million contract. He was posted back on December 5th. Today was the deadline for him to sign with the team. Elite defender is what they say about him. Multiple positions. Can play second base, shortstop, third base, and also in the outfield. So he goes in and will probably be somewhat of a super utility type player with the Dodgers. That's also kind of how we view Tommy Edman with the Dodgers. So they've got two of these super utility guys here moving forward. Yeah, that's another thing that I'm going to be interested to see when it comes to the Cardinals. And as I said it before, and I will continue to say it, until Nolan Arenado gets moved or until we learn that Arenado is going to be sticking around, until one of those two things happens, I would expect it's going to be him getting moved. Last year, there was so much focus on the Cardinals having kind of a set group of players who play every day. And when Tyler O'Neill got traded, that was one of the reasons that the club cited, that they wanted to have a more set lineup and that maybe the team had become just too many kind of moving pieces. And we've talked about positionless baseball. That's a term that's used more in basketball, positionless basketball, where you put five guys on the floor and basically any of them can play any position. And the game has largely gone to that. We've seen, to a lesser degree, baseball go to that, as we see so many players who can play multiple positions. Well, the way things are setting up for the Cardinals is they're probably going to be back in a spot where you're going to have a good number of players on the roster who are going to end up playing a bunch of different positions. As it sits right now, the only guys who are really locked into their spots are Mason Winn at shortstop and Jordan Walker in right field, and I guess your two catchers. But even in that two-catcher situation, Ivan Herrera is going to be somebody who's going to DH for you, I think, a fair amount of time, depending on, well, again, everything goes back to Arenado, but you get what I'm saying. Everything else is kind of up in the air. Yeah, assuming Arenado gets moved, yeah, Nolan Gorman's going to play a lot at third, but there's going to be days he doesn't play there. There's going to be days that he DHs, and you know, Thomas Seggiasi is such a big part of this, and I'm not, if that, to me, not to just kind of like jump around all over the place here, but to me, one of the biggest reasons to move Nolan Arenado is to make sure that you can properly continue to develop and also play, get the services of a Thomas Seggiasi. If Nolan Arenado's around, he's not going to be able to play four or five times a week or three times a week. I don't know what the number's got to be for a young guy like that. I feel like he's got to be playing four times a week. His spot on the roster, he clearly is a guy who, when Mason Winn needs a day off, he could be your backup shortstop. So you need that. We saw there's been times for the Cardinals over the last couple of years that they've had a hard time finding guys who can contribute playing the shortstop position. And yeah, you got Mason Winn, and you can pencil Mason Winn in for a lot of games, but you got to get somebody else in there who can play that. If there's not room on the roster, if you're uncomfortable with Seggiasi being somebody who only plays two or three times a week, well, then who are you going to use as your backup shortstop? There's just a lot of moving parts here, but I am curious if maybe that narrative changes a little bit going into this year compared to what we're hearing this time last year about wanting to have a set group. Because right now, you don't really have a set group outside of a couple, two, three positions. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line. My name is Matt Pauley. Have you for another 45 minutes or so, leading you into SLU basketball tonight. We'll take a break and have more coming up right here on KMOX.